2 minutes we have, please explain what happened this week.
Well, first, we had a very bloody battle. It is, until now, we have the report of 9 executed, assassinated, 23 disappeared, at least 21 arrested, 45 in the hospital, more than 100 injured. It was a very bloody, long-announced battle. It is the beginning of the war, and we are surprised and amazed that the authorities are following the script, literally the script of 10 years ago. First the teachers' mobilization, then the sit-in, then the repression. This is a very complex war. It did not start in Oaxaca. The teachers' struggle, it is a global struggle. It started in Colombia, in Brazil, in Chile, in the U.S., everywhere. And today we are in a war trying to say very firm no to this kind of education. It is useless instruction. We are discussing education. We have a plan of education. We can offer an alternative of education. And we are saying no very firmly to all the so-called structural reforms that mean basically a change of ownership. They are selling our land, our territory. The people are resisting. And then we are resisting with them to oppose this kind of operation. This is a very complex war that just started. We are at the beginning of this very complex war against us, against our territory. Yes?
Gustavo, I understand the governor ordered the police, said they could open fire. He was at a wedding party in another state?
Yes, he was in a party. He asked the intervention of the federal police. But those killing people were the federal police, not just the state police. It was an operation combined by the federal police and the state police.
And we just have 20 seconds. What is happening right now?
Right now, we have a curfew in Nochistlan, in the place. We are, this moment, we don't have any specific activity, but we are waiting for the next scenes of the battle. The battle has just started. We are not at the battle.
We're going to continue this conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Gustavo Esteva, founder of the University of the Land in Oaxaca, author of many books, speaking to us from Oaxaca. This is Democracy Now! Special thanks to our team, to Mike Burke, to Andres Contreras. I'm Amy Goodman. We have 2 job openings. Check our website. Thanks for joining us.
The Sargasso Sea is home to a tiny fighter with a nose for finding its next meal. The sargassum fish hunts prey with its very own fishing pole attached to its snout, as we'll learn today on Our Ocean World. The Sargasso Sea is one name for the western North Atlantic. Here, thick rafts of sargassum seaweed float on the water's surface. But looks can be deceiving. The fronds of sargassum hide their namesake, the sargassum fish. The sargassum fish's mottled brown color and ragged appendages make it hard to distinguish fish from plant. When you're just inches long, seaweed makes a good refuge from predators. But sargassum fish do not spend their lives hiding. They're small but fierce fighters, and by their rules of combat, the losing rival becomes lunch. Sargassum fish are competitive by nature, but occasionally they have to be more stealthy than spry to find their next meal. Luckily, they're specially equipped. Sargassum fish have a rod-like snout with a fleshy tip that looks like bait. To lure in a tasty vittle, they dangle their bait, and the motion piques the curiosity of their prey. The sargassum fish just follows its nose to the next meal. I'm Marilyn Cooley. Our Ocean World, produced with the Joint Ocean Commission Initiative, working to protect the life of the ocean so the ocean can help sustain the life of our planet.
Close your eyes and imagine you're on an unspoiled beach somewhere, sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. Because the Nature Conservancy works locally with people like you to save precious places around the world forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. Nature.org.
Being possible.
popular was all I could think about last year. I wanted to, like, be cool with everybody. I listened to music that I didn't like and laughed at stuff that wasn't funny. I programmed myself to be a totally different person to everyone. But I wasn't myself. Now I'm not pretending to like indie rock or anything like that. And people think that's cool.
Live above the influence. Above weed. Check out AboveTheInfluence.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Being popular was all I could think about last year. I wanted to, like, be cool with everybody. I listened to music that I didn't like and laughed at stuff that wasn't funny. I programmed myself to be a totally different person to everyone. But I wasn't myself. Now I'm not pretending to like indie rock or anything like that. And people think that's cool.
Live above the influence. Above weed. Check out AboveTheInfluence.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
And that was incredibly informative advice from the Nature Conservancy. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM. It's exactly 6:04 p.m. Time for Off the Wall. That was the abbreviated version. I'm Kyle, and that's Emmanuel.
Yes, thanks for turning my microphone on.
And
we knew this day would come at
some point. That was a clever way of getting my attention.
Well, I had to throw something at you because you were facing away from me.
No,
and
you're
talking,
right.
And I'm sitting here like a log.
Completely
and
forgot about you.
Yeah, I'm here, so I'd like to say something because I'm prepared for just such an emergency.
You could help me out with this situation.
What happened there? The theme just broke into pieces?
The player's still on. You know, it's just as well.
Wait. I want that theme back. You're saying the player isn't releasing it?
Well, hold on.
No. You want me to? That's not going to happen.
Should I bang on it?
Usually hitting things is the way to get things done, I've noticed.
All right, pause.
All right, can we get the theme back then?
Pause, play.
All right.
Stop.
All these engineers are showing up now. Yeah, but you guys can't help us.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's starting over again. We're going back in time.
Well, you know what? I can change the pitch. Well, let's go faster then. Here. That's faster.
Oh, you're going to mess with the theme now. I'm sorry, that was my beverage opening. Yeah, you know what? Let's,
there you go.
What are you doing? That's not how it's supposed to sound.
No, I mean, you needed to catch up, so we'll play it a little faster.
Even though this isn't technically Philip Glass, he's going to get wind of this and be angry.
Well,
I just know it's going to happen.
I can't stop time. Don't you understand?
All right. But you're messing with art, Kyle, and you don't mess with art. Art is an absolute. And that's what happens. That's what you see. Even the technology is stepping in and saying, no, I'm not going to do this. I will have no part in this.
All right. I'll put it back to what it was and try that.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? Whoa.
What's going on?
Do you see this? Do you see this flashing?
It's flashing like I've never seen it
going
flash before.
It's jumping from 0 to 1 to 13.
It's all digitally out of skew.
Whoa. Okay.
All right, well...
Stop.
You know, we don't need a theme. We don't need a CD to play. We don't need music. You're doing it again. Wow.
You're listening
Go ahead.
To our difficulty with equipment, I believe that is succumbing to warm weather. It is very warm here.
It is warm.
On the campus of Stony Brook University.
Well, it's warm all over the place, not just on the campus. But yeah, it's probably warmer here because of all the heat we generate.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe there are students on campus that is ready. I guess it's the beginning, so we're all ready for summer classes, yeah, which
the
people take.
Need to take summer classes mm-hmm. because they didn't do so well.
Oh.
Well, no, that used to be the reason. When, you know, for elementary school, if you had to take, just turn it off. Break it in half. I don't care.
All right.
But no, it's different at college. People take summer courses because they want to. I don't know why they want to, but they do. Hot and sticky in the classroom and worse when you go outside.
And our equipment knows this.
Everyone else is on vacation. The place is lonely. But, you know, if you want to improve your mind and take classes, who am I to stop you? Well, I'll do my best in the next hour. So, yeah, we're back. We were in Brazil last week. I don't know if you caught that at the end of our last show. And you know, there's a funny last show we played. We had this old recording kicking around from when we transported the dogs a year ago. And I didn't say we got lost so much as we got into a quandary where we're driving this massive U-Haul and we kept running out of fuel or getting very close to running out of fuel. It happened four different times and we never actually ran out of fuel. We just came so close each time and we didn't know if there was going to be a gas station up ahead. We didn't know where we were. We had no way of being in communication with people because literally there was no cell service anywhere. There's no data. In one place, there wasn't even electricity. Remember that gas station we found that was completely powered by, I think, its own gas or something?
Yeah, they had a bunch of generators and independent sources to power the whole place from. And that was interesting to see just how they survived. I think it was at the top of a pass or in the middle or entrance to a large park.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They were sort of the last stop before you had a long stretch. And you get that a lot on road trips and especially in the north of America.
Mm-hmm. We found that out. It's great because last week, and if you didn't hear it, by all means, go into the archive and listen. We basically had a crisis unfold right where we were driving in the middle of the night where nobody was around. There were literally no people anywhere. It was completely dark. It was dramatic. And I had a lot of fun. Well, I didn't really have fun at the time, but I had fun listening to that. Anyway, so that was what was on last week. But we were in Brazil. Very short trip, only a few days. We had a speaking engagement down there. But it was your first time in the Southern Hemisphere, right?
That's right. I was really kind of nervous, but excited. This is my first time in a BRIC country.
A BRIC country?
A BRIC country.
You want to explain what a BRIC country is?
It's an economic bloc in global trade, and it's actually an acronym for several countries that are emerging economies. And so those
S-C-T.
Are
wait no
can you guess them?
Well, BRIC, probably Brazil is the first, right?
Exactly.
B-R.
Yeah,
they get,
yeah,
they get two letters. Everyone gets two letters.
No, just one.
Oh, so there's next one is R. So it's Brazil, Romania,
no,
Iceland. Well, okay, I don't know then. I don't
Russia
know. Russia, okay,
how could you forget them?
Well, I'm trying to figure out where we fit into this because there's no U in BRIC.
You're right.
You know? So
Brook or Buick, but that no, I don't think
that
so.
Doesn't sound right.
Brewick. No. India and China, the other ones.
Okay, so this is a completely different kind of alliance. I had no idea.
It is. It's interesting. So these are countries that are emerging, and they're expanding. In a lot of ways,
Brazil's emerged, though. I mean, they've come out. They're out there. They're big and vibrant.
Well, that's one way of describing the city that we were in and what we saw of it. It is immense and expansive.
São Paulo is where we were.
Yes, São Paulo.
Well, that's how some people say it, but you actually pronounce it differently
mm-hmm.
when you're down there. And it was really cool because, you know, I found out that I wasn't European.
What the heck was with
a
that?
A couple of days. Okay, as some of you may know, I have a European passport because I had relatives that were born in Ireland, and I was able to piggyback onto that and get Irish citizenship, and through that get an EU passport. And that's great. You know, having an EU passport speeds entry into many countries, allowed me to go to North Korea unencumbered, allowed me to go into many European countries without having to answer any questions.
Importantly, and it's your way. You know, you can choose.
Well, it's cool because I'm on the airplane. I enter the airport with my U.S. passport, but then on the airplane, I switch identities, like, you know, James Bond or something, mm-hmm. and I become European. And then when I arrive, I show that passport, and I am not American anymore. It has its advantages. It's hard to say, but it does have its advantages, yes. I'll think of a better way to say it. But Brazil was a unique case because they imposed these nasty customs onto Americans, to coin a phrase.
Only as a sort of retribution.
Definitely. Yeah, because U.S. did the same thing to Brazil, so Brazil did exactly what the U.S. did.
So it's in kind.
Yeah. What Brazil did was require every U.S. citizen to get a visa to enter their country. And then when they got there, they had to have their fingerprint and their picture taken, just like every Brazilian coming to the United States has to do. But I was European, so I didn't have to do that. And I remember last time I went to Brazil, Americans had to wait on this long line, and I just zipped right on in. It was great. But then I found out literally 2 days before our trip that my passport, my European passport, had expired as of June 1st. So, I wasn't going to be using that. I had to use my American passport. And by the stroke of luck, we found this out actually much sooner. It turns out that the visa requirement has been waived because of the Olympics taking place in Rio. If they had not been waived, first of all, I would have been screwed because I wouldn't be able to get a visa in time to get down there after discovering that I had no European passport. But you were trying to get a visa without knowing that it wasn't required.
Well, I started going through the process. I was looking into it. I wanted to travel the right way. Obviously, these are things you do before you go somewhere. You do some research and make your plan accordingly. But it caught us off guard in that I had already been planning to start digging through, figuring out the rules and what I needed to do by when and where I needed to go. A little bit kind of annoyed, but I was willing to go through that process. As you said, it's fair and it's their policy, so I'll go through whatever hoops they want to throw at me.
Yeah, but there were some pretty big hoops because you were here in New York. It turns out because you're a native of Seattle that you had to go to the consulate in San Francisco. And that just isn't possible to do that to get a visa.
I didn't say it wasn't going to be without complication.
Yeah, and we started to realize, wow, this is almost unimaginable that we could do all this. And I don't know, maybe there was a way around that where we just had to go to New York or something, but it still involved visits, it still involved paperwork, it involved a fee, all sorts of things like that. And then we just discovered, by total luck, oh, by the way, as of June 1st, they're waiving the visa temporarily for the summer so people go to the Olympics. And you don't have to go to the Olympics, you can go down there and do whatever and come back, and that's just fine. So, yeah, it really, fate smiled on us for actually getting into the country. And I'm glad we did, even though it's like the worst possible timing for us because we're busy planning a conference and have all these projects to do. Fortunately, I was able to do a lot of work on airplanes and in hotel rooms, in taxis, all over the place. In fact, my goal was to not let people know that I was away, and most of our staff thought I was in the office. Which I think is a win. I propped up a little mannequin, you know, and that seemed to do the job as far as, you know, actually seeing something. But I was communicating just as, in fact, better than I do when I'm here.
Well, had it not been for the CD players giving us away, we may well have been able to continue to say we are away.
Yeah, that's true. Now people know we're back.
But everyone knows that was happening to Zabby on Monday, so.
Well, we, as I mentioned, we do have a lot of planning that we're doing for the upcoming HOPE conference, which is taking place July 22nd through 24th in New York City. In fact, you'll probably hear a Brazil show during that period because I'm sure we'll be too busy to even be here. But The schedule is coming together. We'll probably talk more about that on Off the Hook tomorrow night. By the way, you know, last week on Off the Hook, I know they tried reaching me in Brazil. We were at the airport at that point, going back.
Uh-huh.
And my phone just would not work. It's weird. You know, I have unlimited data and fairly cheap talk time, but it's no good if you can't actually connect to a phone line.
At will.
Yeah, I tried calling. It didn't go through. They tried calling me. Didn't go through. And we tried that for a long, long time, and there's not much more you can do at that
point. Yeah, we hadn't really had a chance to get phone cards or anything as like a backup, but it was sort of annoying because there was no indication that it wasn't going to work prior to that. I mean, it had worked fairly well during the trip.
Yeah. Well, of course, I didn't call anybody. I was texting and you know, reading websites and things like that. But, oh well, you know, it didn't really matter that much. They don't really need us to do a good radio show over there. We had a lot of good experiences. Saw, you know, a good part of the city in the limited amount of time we had. And, of course, talked to a lot of really cool people at a conference that we went to.
Yeah, and I was just really kind of looking at everything and taking it all in, looking at the infrastructure and... There's a lot of open wire not open wire, but wires on aerial installations everywhere, crisscrossing, and you can imagine the layers, years and years of stuff. I mean, I think a lot of times in urban areas, we're used to stuff being underground and you don't see it as much, which it doesn't mean there isn't tangles and layers of wiring that's accumulated over the years. Doesn't mean it isn't there, but when you can see it like that, it's sort of interesting. You know, you have to bend down and maybe not hit something.
Yes.
Or just things that maybe it broke and got forgotten about. It was sort of interesting to see, but there's apparently a lot of development going on, things building up, and I saw that as well. We were in downtown, of course, and we walked around a fair amount looking for sort of little everyday signs of everyday life and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you have to walk around, just see things.
But it does look like there's a massive amount going on. I think their rail is also in need of some investment. I think there's fits and spurts of that going on.
It's expanded. Since the last time I was there, the metro system has expanded a bit, but yeah, it needs more.
Yeah, and we would have definitely explored if we had a little bit more time, but it was a great initial look, and I'm with you. I want to explore more, maybe find some rail down there and take a train or visit some neighboring countries.
And it was winter. It's winter down there, but you know, you wouldn't really guess it's winter because we had temperatures in the 70s and 80s, and not very much in the way of snow, that's for sure. So winter is different in some places. It's not quite as, I guess it's like winter in Florida or something.
Right. We were joking. I mean, you could wear a coat and look and appear as though you're bundling up.
People were wearing coats.
Yeah, they were. And I found myself doing that just to blend in a little bit. It wasn't really needed. It was kind of like...
Oh, but I did do something I've been meaning to do. First of all, two things, actually. I got to see the sky a little bit. Every time I've been to South America, it's been cloudy, and there were a couple of clear days this time. I was able to actually look up and see stars that I've never seen before. In the Southern Hemisphere, it's different. The only stars you will see are the ones that rise and set here, because... everything appears to revolve around the North Star in the Northern Hemisphere, because that's the star that appears above the North Pole, directly above the North Pole. So, you know, constellations like the Big Dipper, which I know technically isn't a constellation, revolve around the North Star and never set. And because of that, if you're below a certain point, you will never see that because it'll never come over the horizon in the Southern Hemisphere. And the stars that are further away from the North Star do rise and set. Those are the seasonal ones. A constellation like Orion, for instance, you'll see in the winter. You won't see it in the summer. However, in the Southern Hemisphere, guess what? There it is. It's visible in the night sky in their winter. But you will never see the Big Dipper down there. But you will see other stars that you will never see here. And I didn't know what they were, but I did see stars that I said, yeah, I don't know that star. And that was kind of cool. And the other thing I did, finally, I've been meaning to do this, You know, when you flush something down the toilet, or you you have a drain, and it goes a certain direction, clockwise or counterclockwise, I wanted to see, does it really go in the other direction? And you know what? It does not. It does not go the other way in the Southern Hemisphere. And then I started reading up on this, and I realized the whole thing is a fantastic hoax. It's never been the case. You can design a sink to make water go any way you want, so it really has no effect whatsoever. There is an effect if you have a cyclone, you know, a cyclonic weather condition, you know, like a hurricane or a tornado or something like that. Okay, that does change direction if you're in the Southern Hemisphere versus the Northern Hemisphere. But something as piddling as a drain, no, has absolutely no effect whatsoever. I can't believe it took me until this point in my life to realize that that was false.
To debunk that.
But it feels good. It feels good to be a little bit more knowledgeable.
I looked up. I saw a little bit, but I don't think it was as distinct for me. But I'm still learning a lot about celestial body and stuff that's stuff to look out for, and just how to orient yourself when you're stargazing and so on.
Well, I'd really like to go outside of a city to look at the night sky in the Southern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of globular clusters that are in the sky. We don't have those up in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's just basically millions of stars all grouped together. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see all kinds of other things. The Southern Cross is one of the constellations. But again, you need a good night sky. You need to be out of the city to do that. And maybe if we go to Chile or something, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. They have Imagine? There's probably so much down there that we would love to check out. We'll have to look it up. We could go on and on. I will mention that there was wonderful things to eat, and
yes,
we were treated so well by people down there, and it was pretty comfortable walking around, and I enjoyed my first time seeing it, and I will be down there again.
I didn't even hear the word Zika until we were in the airport leaving.
Wasn't that funny?
It's not something people are going nuts over down there, and I didn't see a single mosquito either.
Me either. And it wasn't until we were really in the airport seeing like slideshows and funny signs like that or on the plane itself.
Yeah, it's kind of late to tell you how to avoid it if you're leaving. I don't understand the point in that.
I brought some coffee back.
You did, yes. We went to a place actually owned by a guy from Boston.
Yeah.
that we found. It's named after Boston, and we thought there was no connection whatsoever. But in fact, everything in the place has something to do with Boston, and the guy has a Boston accent and everything. And you asked him, where can I get coffee? And he said, right here. I have coffee. And he sold you coffee.
Yes. That was fantastic. So that was a good souvenir. It's good coffee, too. I've tried a little bit. I'm working on my coffee making skills.
Well, I've yet to be offered any, and if I am offered some, I'll try some as well, and hopefully have the same opinion.
Yeah. Getting back into the country was kind of interesting, too. They had these robots, basically, that spit out receipts
with
your pictures.
That's not nice. Those are human beings just like you and me.
No. I checked. They didn't have any kind of bio or
oh, you mean the machine? Oh, okay, I thought you meant the clerks. Okay,
it was not
yeah,
a cell or a cell-based life form.
Right. It does things. Yes. Well, they change. You know how you have to fill out the little card when you come back into the country? Those of you who have never traveled don't know what we're talking about, but you have to fill out a little card when you come back into the country.
Oh, right, yeah. It's sort of related. They don't want to look at your handwriting anymore.
Well, yeah, what you do now, I thought the...
You might sneak something in with your handwriting.
Yeah, but I thought the what's the right term? You can't say a stewardess. Flight attendant, right?
Yes.
Flight attendant on the airport, on the airplane, said, no, you don't need those anymore. There's a new way of doing things. She had also complimented me on the shirt. I'm actually wearing the same shirt right now.
Wow.
My WBAI shirt. She said, I listen to that station. I can't believe that somebody on an airplane in Brazil is telling me that she listens to my radio station, one of my radio stations. I thought maybe, you know, she didn't get one of her premiums, and she was messing with me and saying, no, you don't need this vital form anymore. And I would get in a lot of trouble. In fact, when you arrive, you simply hold your passport up to this machine, and it knows what flight you're on. You don't have to tell it. It knows. It's expecting you.
A lot better than the robots that check you in,
least. Yes, yes.
And anyway, it correlates what presumably what flight you've just deplaned from.
Uh-huh.
And it takes a little picture of you. You have to, like, line yourself up.
Well, you have to answer a few questions first. Any chickens with you? Have you been to, you know, a farm? I have the Z, a member of ISIS. You know, they throw that in just in case, you know, you're not reading carefully. Then once you do all that...
Are you a robot?
Once you do all that, then it tells you to use a neutral expression, I think it was the phrase or something.
Yeah.
And to look at the camera. Of course, I looked at the picture, not the camera, so I completely messed it up.
I found myself trying to line myself up, and I was looking down, then I had to look up, and the rest of the time, I made a point of looking extra perplexed, because I was really perplexed, and I think I overacted a little bit.
I was more flummoxed.
Hopefully that didn't give me away as being the interesting individual that I am. But anyway, yeah, it took all of, I think, 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It was bizarre, and I wanted to take a picture. Ultimately, I took my hat off as well.
Uh-huh.
And
I did not.
Finally stood still enough and thought myself lined up and touched the thing, I guess, to take the picture. And it was a decent picture.
It prints it out.
Walk over. Yeah. And then you go into the line with a pared down sort of inspection.
Yes.
There's still a barrier in the whole nine, but maybe a handful of border people maybe that look at you.
The only time that you save is the time filling out the form. That's pretty much what that replaces.
Yeah.
So now you have a picture of yourself. But here's the thing. We were told that that wasn't ever going to happen to us, that only people like people from Brazil or people from other parts of the world would have to have their picture taken and their fingerprints taken when they came to this country, but as citizens, never. And now here we are having our pictures taken.
And we noted that's a half step.
Mm-hmm.
That is a half step to eliminate that paperwork and presumably your handwriting. And then no biometrics. But I think the machines are capable of that. And for people, the first question you're asked is if it's a visa or if you have a green card or a visa.
Uh-huh.
or you're a citizen. And when you choose one of the other options, then it asks you for that additional now biometric information.
Such, what would that be?
Like your four fingers on
so
your right
hand. So
it
has the ability, that machine has the ability to take your fingerprints.
Right, so one of the scanning beds is for documents.
Uh-huh.
And so they don't want you to put your fingerprints on it all the time. But the other one to the right of it, which we didn't actually have to use because we clicked we're citizens.
Yeah.
I think that'll light up and blink and start barking at you for your paw prints.
Interesting. Well, the day will come when they request that of us as well, I think. I predict that.
It was a half step into the surveillance border control.
But entering the country was pleasant.
No, it was really nice.
I didn't get interrogated. I'm always happy when that happens.
Yeah, we enjoyed the quick, more or less quick, long flight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very easy to come back, and here we are.
Yes, yes.
And boy, there was a lot going on.
There was.
While we were away.
Quite a bit. We heard about Orlando when we were down there only a couple of days afterwards. You know, it seems every time we go away, something horrible happens back home. But this was unparalleled. It was just kind of hard to not let it affect us throughout everything we were supposed to be doing down there. And seeing the effect it had on people up here as well. And, you know, horrible as it is, it's always my hope that maybe this is the kick in the ass we need to actually change things and realize what the problems are. But, you know, looking at what happened yesterday in the Senate, where the Senate failed to pass any gun control whatsoever, it seems hopeless. It really seems hopeless without some major changes or just locking those bastards in those rooms until they do their job. I was really getting upset down there in Brazil because we had CNN on. And I said, you know, the first politician who tells us that we have to pray about this is going to earn my unrelenting wrath for until the end of time. And, of course, it didn't take very long for the governor of Florida to say exactly that the most important thing you can do right now is pray. It's like, no, no, the most important thing is not to pray. Most important thing is to do your goddamn job and pass some bills and prevent this kind of crap from happening all the damn time. You know, there's absolutely no reason on earth for people to have the kind of weaponry this lunatic had inside that club and to be able to mow down so many people so quickly. Nobody has ever given me a good reason for anybody to have anything like that, any citizen. I mean, you know, the reasons I've heard, well, you know, if 50 people are storming my house, then I need this. Like, okay, how many people who are not terrorists themselves have 50 people storming their homes that need that kind of... And here's the other thing. If you say the wrong term, you get jumped on for saying the wrong term. I'm saying... If I say automatic weapon, we'll get a dozen letters saying it's not an automatic weapon, it's a semi-automatic weapon. I don't care. I don't care what it is. You can call it a Tonka toy if you want, but it's dangerous. It shoots a lot of bullets. I don't know the terminology. I don't want to know the terminology. I don't want to be educated on what kind of gun does what. All I know is this crap can't stand, not like this. There is no reason on earth that anybody has ever presented to me that makes any sense. You point to the Second Amendment? No, you know, this is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind at all. They did not know anything about automatic or semi-automatic weaponry or anything of that sort. I'll tell you what, you know, you Second Amendment zealots who think that you understand exactly what they meant, use the weaponry of the time. We won't have a problem. Use bayonets and use rifles and whatever else. You have to reload after every shot. That's what they were talking about. That's the kind of weaponry of the time. And, you know, I can live with that. You know, if someone's walking down the street with a bayonet, all right, you know, I see them at least. They didn't have concealed weapons. They didn't have Glocks and they didn't have methods of taking out entire rooms. That was never on any of their radar, which they also didn't know about. So, you know, to keep saying this kind of thing, which is a fairly new interpretation. We didn't have these conversations 50 years ago. 50 years ago, it was a lot saner, and it's about the only thing that was saner. But now it just seems like every bit of weaponry you can get your hands on is somehow constitutionally protected, and it's not. And we understand that for other things. We're not allowed to have tanks. Hell, we're not allowed to have cannons. I don't understand that. I wouldn't mind having a cannon. What's wrong with having a cannon?
Certain fighter jets.
You can't have a fighter jet either. The thing that really annoys me, you can't have bulletproof vest. You can't stop the guy next to you from having something that you know, can take out an entire room full of people. But you can't protect yourself against that because that's illegal.
Yeah, I think that's a state by state kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But body armor is it's terrible that we'd have to think that way. But in a lot of institutions, it's just like any other kind of first aid or, you know, like an AED or something. It's just another tool or a consideration in certain environments, just like we've normalized metal detectors in schools and things like that, that people actually have to think about and have access to just to survive certain circumstances and so on. It's pretty symbolic.
Well, the word normalize is interesting because that's exactly what's happening. And kids today, you know, if you're a kid listening to this right now and you go through a metal detector to get to school, that's not normal. All right. You might think that's normal. You might have been doing that all your life. That's not normal. Did you go through a metal detector in your schools?
Not at all.
No, and I certainly didn't at all. We didn't even have doors. You know, it's something that happens over time. And then it becomes something that you don't know any other way of doing things. So, hey, that's normal. But it's not normal. It's indicative of a sickness that we have to even think this way. Now, we were just in Brazil. We noticed a few things down there that we didn't think were normal, but the people there thought were completely normal. There are gates on every driveway, big metal gates, you don't park your car unprotected. You park it behind the gate. There are security guards virtually for every building, armed security guards, all right, because...
There's some on each block in some cases, like little guard houses.
Yeah.
where somebody mans it and they have shifts and so on.
Remember that apartment building? I went to a barbecue in someone's apartment building. And I don't want to make this sound negative because it's totally not. In fact, I think it's overkill for the way the city is now. And I think it was a lot more crime-ridden in the past. But we went to a barbecue in an apartment building. It was like going to a prison complex. And I don't mean that the way it sounds, because the people there were great, and it was an amazing place. But entering, you had to show ID. Well, we didn't have to show ID, but the people with us had to prove who they were.
They had, like, a sign-in sheet.
Yeah, a sign-in sheet, and that's fine. But then we had this kind of, okay, now we're behind one barricade, but we're not yet in. We're in that kind of no-man's land between the two.
Double entry doors.
Yeah, double entry doors.
But they were, like iron gates.
Yeah, it was really weird. It felt like complete overkill, but it's normal. It's normal down there to do that, at least in that city it is. And then we went through the second barricade, and we were there. We were behind the barricades.
There was surveillance.
Surveillance all over the place. Of course, we're used to that here as well. Mm-hmm. So little things like that, where every entry was monitored and controlled, and there's gates everywhere. Of course, a lot of people have guns. It's a gun culture down there as well. So it's different, you know. But it's normal.
It was in the back of my mind, but it wasn't as prevalent as I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think people were all sort of in it together in a lot of ways. There was definitely some camaraderie, definitely consideration. I mean, a lot of security practices like that, but that was not the tone of the area. We went to some cool bakeries and some places that were open late. And you just be able to, like, hang out with the guys that were, like, taxi drivers and so on. And that reminds me a lot of New York a little bit.
But, you know, even going to the bakery on our last day, we had to go through a barricade to get into the bakery.
Oh, yeah, and they had a token system that, like, tracks your purchases. And,
which is kind of cool. I like the different token systems in different places. Some are magnetic stripes. Some are just literally tokens that you hold on to. And they keep track of everything you pay on the way out. But again, you can't just walk in. You can't just open the door and walk in.
It's like a turnstile,
yeah.
I guess you'd call it.
So, you know, that to me isn't normal either. And I think that's developed out of necessity, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, they don't want people running off or large groups of people running in quickly without... being scrutinized or slowed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of barriers and stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, that's something to consider when we change the rules here, because the rules change and they stay that way and it becomes normal, and it's not right. We have to change how we view this. And I think Orlando might have been the turning point, despite what Congress is not doing. I think it's the turning point with people. And I think we are getting angrier and angrier at the inaction and at the stupidity.
Polarization.
Yeah, and at just the unnecessary loss of life that we keep seeing day after day. You know, I can spout all kinds of statistics. It's meaningless because, you know, whatever I say is just going to be refuted by people who believe in other statistics. I don't think anybody can disagree, though, that this is a serious problem and is caused by all these weapons being out there. And if we didn't have them in the first place, boy, it would be so much better. And we should work together towards getting to that stage again. It might be naive, but, you know, it does work in some places. Australia is a great example of a place that used to have a lot more guns, and they decided as a country, we're not going to do this. And guess what? They haven't had mass shootings in ages, decades. And I don't think Australia is really that bad a place. Maybe one day we'll go there and see what's normal in Australia.
I don't know much about it. I mean, other than what you hear, getting a bunch of phone calls.
Yeah, it's the NRA. I know what it is. The NRA, you know, they find out immediately if you're criticizing anything, and they send their minions. But okay, you know, if you want to go to delay and take phone calls, go ahead. I'm not going to stop you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we could have more gun-free zones, and maybe not taking calls is a way to avoid
See,
that.
See, I don't like that phrase, because that implies that the default is not to have a gun-free, like a free speech zone.
Right.
You know, every place should be a free speech zone. You don't need to zone free speech. You don't need to say this is a place where guns should not be. All right.
WUSB Starting Rock!
Hello.
Wow. That was kind of smooth, I guess.
Oh, I'm way smooth. Hello, you're on WUSB.
Hey, I was just listening to a show on my way home from work, and I just wanted some feedback from you guys, a couple things I was thinking about.
Okay, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rockakama.
Fantastic, go ahead. What's your comment? What's your question?
So I'm a gun owner for, since I was 18, I have a bunch of guns. I have guns people may think are scary guns, so on and so forth, the whole story.
Right, right.
I'm not some right-wing nut job. You know, I buy them, I shoot them at the range, I go hunting, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that. I know where you're coming from.
One thing I always think about, though, when I feel like a lot of people are very hot to trot on, oh, gun control, let's lay down the line on the such, you know. And, like, I can understand where people are coming from, but I feel like a lot of people don't mention, how about, like, mental health and ability of the people that are purchasing these guns. I feel like even in the Columbine incident, these kids were bullied since they were in kindergarten. Obviously now, I mean, it's 2016, there's a lot more going on as far as anti-bullying and stuff like that. But I think mental illness plays a way larger part than what type of a weapon these people are using to do these horrific things. You know, I don't know if the type of weapon or the type of destructive mechanism is so much the problem as much as the people that are doing it. You can go to Home Depot and build a bomb if you want to. I mean, I have a gun at home. It's not an AR-15. It's nothing like that. It shoots a larger round than, you know, an AR would shoot. And it looks a little different. It looks less scary, but it's a longer distance round. It, you know, I don't hear anything about those. It's all about the ones that look scary. I just figured I would call, maybe you guys chat about it. You know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I have to lean over here for you to hear me. I hear what you're saying. Concerning the AR-15, can we maybe reach a common point here? Do you see any reason why people should have that kind of weaponry at their disposal?
I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to own it. Like I said, I have a different rifle made by Ruger. It's a larger round. You can carry the same, if not more, amount of rounds in a magazine. They make all the same things for them. It just seems like people are so quick to attack the AR-15, and I'm like really not sure why.
Well, it's because the AR-15 is quick to attack people. I mean, it's a deadly weapon, and
Ruger Mini 30, and it shoots farther. It's more. I mean, it's. To say it's a larger weapon.
Okay, well, I'm not supporting that either. I'm saying that having these kinds of weapons is a recipe for disaster. And yeah, I agree that mental health is a huge issue, but it's also a very difficult issue to deal with, because unless somebody is confined in a mental institution, how do you go to the authorities and say, you know, this person shouldn't have a gun, I think they're mentally unstable? You're going to get a lot of fighting back if you say that. There are a lot of people I could say that about who would justifiably disagree with me. Who wins?
Oh, no, it would be the same type of struggle, you know. But, I mean, I just feel like a lot of politicians are so quick to jump on let's enact laws and not, like, I'm not saying let's treat sick terrorists, but I'm saying maybe let's treat some of these kids, like the kid with the movie theater. I mean, obviously troubled kids, you know?
Yeah, except they don't show signs of that until they actually do something. Not signs that get on people's radar. Yeah, there are little hints. You know, you could pick any one of us and say, oh, yeah, there's the sign. There's the hint of trouble from 20 years ago. But unless something actually happens, nobody's going to do that.
I understand that.
Yeah, okay. With retailers and manufacturers presuming people are all the same baseline of sanity is foolhardy, definitely, in my opinion. Thanks for your insight and call. I'm going to move on, okay?
Absolutely. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Good caller. I mean, this is the kind of person we can talk to about these sort of things, I think. And
I think there's... When I was talking about polarization, I definitely wanted to point that out, that it's, you know, it's being touted as a binary between terrorism now and guns, gun control. And I think that it's a myriad of those things. It's a combination, and we can't look at it as one or the other or debate that. We actually have to talk about the whole thing and open up all these other issues within it. And I think particular guns should be looked at in different ways, just as we've looked at a lot of things that have advanced technologically over the years, and the interpretation of it. Also, that manufacturer that he mentioned is actually the one company that's calling for action against this new legislation. I looked at pretty much every manufacturer's website.
I understand why they're against it, because it'll hurt their sales. That's really the only reason that a gun manufacturer would be against that kind of legislation. Although it does seem to help their sales when people panic and buy tons of weapons. But here's my question. Why is this so important to people? It's not, don't kid yourself. It's got nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It really does not. You're not protecting yourself against an evil government. We've had evil governments, and you haven't done anything about them. We're not being invaded by foreign enemies either. It's basically day-to-day life doesn't really change all that much. Why do we care so much about all this weaponry? It's a sickness, I really believe. I mean, you know, being fascinated by technology is one thing, being fascinated by history and all that. There's nobody saying that studying this and even learning how things work isn't something you should pursue. But the arsenals people collect, and just the putting this ahead of everything else, the most important thing in the world to you, above speech, above liberty, above everything, is having your guns. Why does that matter so much? There's something there we really need to figure out and study, because I think that's the root of the problem.
Yeah, protecting the weapons more than you're actually protecting people's lives. That's basically, I think, the way it should be measured.
Mm-hmm.
And one other quick thing I would add is that you really don't hear, I mean, you hear a lot about people arming themselves to protect their home or their family or their kids.
And from other people that have armed themselves.
Right. I just don't like the escalation, personally. I don't like and getting into that kind of thought process is, to me, too negative pragmatism. You don't hear a lot about non-lethal weapons. And I think for the majority of people just simply protecting themselves from an intruder, there are a lot of other ways to disable someone who is asking you for your belongings in like a mugging kind of situation, or whatever myriad of attackers you think are out there, I think don't necessarily need to be someone you pull a gun on.
Well, you know, I heard something the other day that I think makes a lot of sense. The person who pulls the gun first is in control. And that's, you know, when you're being mugged, if you're being mugged by somebody with a gun, they have control, okay? You're not going to do a Dirty Harry type of thing and pull something out of your ankle and overpower them. It's probably not going to happen. Same thing with home invasion. The ones that end in death tend to be ones where people exchange gunfire. Of course, there are exceptions. I know there are exceptions. There are instances where people do use guns and come out victorious, or cases where people don't have guns and wind up being massacred. Yeah, that happens too. But far and away, when you introduce more weapons into the situation, you have more gunfire, hence more death.
And that escalation.
Yeah, it's an escalation. This is the escalation. What has happened over the past 50 or so years is an escalation. And, you know, back in, I don't want to hark back to the 50s because, God, what an awful period that was. But, you know, there were guns in our society, but not like today. It wasn't anything like that. People had access to, you know, for hunting or, you know, for what they considered to be home protection, but it wasn't at the insane level that it was now. Now, if it worked then, and we thought we were espousing the Second Amendment values back then, what has changed? What has changed where we need all these automatic and semi-automatic and assault rifle things? Why is that suddenly an issue? And I think there's there's something to study there and to learn from. Hey, we should leave.
We have another phone call.
Okay, but we should leave delay after we do that because we are starting to run out of time.
Hi there, you're on WUSB.
Oh, hi. I would like to respond to your guest about the weapons competition.
I'm a guest now. Okay, when you land the plane, let us know.
Yeah, are you in a dirigible of some kind? Or a hot air balloon?
Oh, my God, yeah, I'm in the Hindenburg.
Wow.
Well, you don't have much time, then.
Careful parking.
Make it quick.
It's never on a psychic, because my goal in life is to rebuild the Hindenburg.
Wow, well, and before you do that, would you like to make a comment about the program or something that you've noticed?
Certainly. I'm not a gun owner myself, but I do believe in gun rights, and I agree with your guest on something he said, that we don't need these guns in everyday, day-to-day life.
Why am I a guest?
Okay, yeah. First of all, he's the host.
Well, no, I'm not. I mean, yeah, I'm a co-host.
I mean, we're all hosts, but yeah, this is a program from 6 to 7 on Tuesdays.
Let the guy say his piece.
Go on.
So I'm just remembering around the Hurricane Sandy when we were out of power for 2 weeks or so.
You needed your gun?
I don't have a gun. I'm not a gun owner. But I just remember seeing the line for the gasoline, and I saw he get very close to violence. And, again, day-to-day life, you don't need that.
Right, right.
We don't, I'm just thinking if there's ever a power outage that lasts more than 2 weeks, there are a lot of people that live paycheck to paycheck, and when people get hungry and they run out of food, they start marauding around and acting, civilization and society go out the window very quickly. And it's very short-sighted to just think that because you don't need it now, that every day in regular day-to-day life, that there might not come a time. It's hard to believe something can happen until it actually happens.
Yeah.
So,
well, we can respond to this, but I think.
All right.
We need to let him go.
Yeah. All right. Well, drive carefully. And good luck. Thanks for that comment. We're almost out of time. Maybe write us a letter at otw@2600.com. otw@2600.com.
We have to leave delay.
We're leaving delay.
I have something to say about that, but let's get out of delay first because it's awfully distracting.
That's
okay,
right.
Yeah, much better out of delay. You can anticipate these things happening, but, when people are going to get into all sorts of conflicts and there's going to be violence. Yes, it's always going to be violence. But when you have violence and then you introduce weapons into it, it gets much, much worse. So this whole notion of being prepared for something in the future, it's kind of not the right way to think about it, because what you need in a situation like that of crisis is less in the way of armaments and escalation and more in the way of rationality, where you can work stuff out. Because yeah, it's going to happen. You're going to have a really bad day, and if you have a gun and you have a really bad day, it's going to get worse. No doubt about that. So you got to plan for that sort of thing and not have at your fingertips the means to make it so much worse.
So if you think you're good at planning those things or leading, join emergency search and rescue, join CERT for emergency response teams, maybe organize a first aid squad. You could volunteer and be a first responder and community organize for when something like that does happen, because you do need unity. You need a community to come together. That's kind of what we do here with radio.
That's right. And if you want to be part of that, you want to write to us, otw@2600.com is our email address. Please voice whatever your opinions are. We want to hear them. Hey, we're out of time. I wanted to play this song I just discovered. I'm on a 70s kick lately. I told you about this a few weeks ago, where I got the fake songs, and now I've been looking for the real songs. And this is a real. You want to start that machine up if it's going to cooperate with us? This is a real song. Okay, you have it. You have it in that weird mode. Where you fix the mode so that it's not playing it like a chipmunk. Yeah, that's not right. That's not right. Stop it and start over again, Kyle. I won't have music being denigrated like that. Wow. This is a song called Neanderthal Man. It's by a band called Hot Legs. And this was... There you go. This is an accidental hit. Okay, they made this song. They called it a studio exercise to test out drum sounds on new recording equipment, and they wound up selling over 2 million copies of this when somehow it got out. Just listen for a second.
I like this.
You can't hear the vocals.
What vocals?
Exactly.
Someone because, singing?
Yeah, but they weren't intending on there being vocals. This is just basically a test song, but it turned into something extremely popular for them. Of course, they never had another hit, but still, you know, it was a good experience.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody's in the other room.
Pretty much, pretty much.
And they're like banging on the ceiling to get them to be quiet.
So after releasing the song, or signing in a contract, they got phone calls from the record company or the publishing company saying, we like the record, but we can't hear the words. and I had to explain they weren't supposed to hear the words, and they agreed to release it just as they wanted it. But here's something else that happened that we're going to hear in just a second. What is that counter up to right now? 3 minutes?
3:07.
Okay. In just about another minute, we're going to hear this. There's a further hitch before the song was released.
What?
Yeah, I'm not sure if this actually made it onto the recording. I think it did, because I think I know what it is. There's a loud metallic burst towards the end of the song. It blew a 1,200-pound cutter head. I don't know what a cutter head is. But as the track was being mastered in the Phonogram cutting suite...
Oh, wow. So, like, the ruby cutting head of the lathe. It's a okay. Vinyl lathe.
Well, you could say that, and that might make sense. They said we had a sound on that track that was something that had never been recorded before. We made the sound by taking a large 6-foot by 4-foot sheet of steel into the studio. It was actually a sheet we were going to fireproof one of the doors with, and then at the right moment, we had hit it with a hammer. The hammer blow gave it such a shock frequency-wise that the equipment just couldn't take it.
Oh, so dynamic.
Yeah, let's listen. In about 10 seconds. That was it. Yeah, I think that was the sound. It didn't blow our equipment, but just goes to show how things are improved.
That's great.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Good night, everyone.
Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. Special guest tonight, poet George Wallace. And we're going to be talking about his new book, Long Island Poetry, and whatever else we feel like. And so stay tuned for that. And of course, strange, bizarre music. WUSB Stony Brook. All right. This is Finn's Revolution. This is WUSB Stony Brook. It's about 7:08 p.m. on Tuesday evening. And we are very lucky to have our friend, Mr. George Wallace, with us. Among other things, I always like to say this, but, former poet laureate. of Suffolk County.
Yeah, the first of seven.
That's right. Oh, there's been seven now, huh?
Seven, yeah.
Okay, all right. And George, George is a poet, and he's been very, very involved in the scene, not only on Long Island, but everywhere, and publishes self sometimes, but is published often, which is super cool. You know, right. In compilation books, you know, and all these things. And you do readings everywhere.
Well, yeah, right now I'm getting ready to go out to California for a couple of appearances at Beyond Baroque in Venice Beach. Up in the Bay Area, I'll be at the Art House Gallery, run by Harold Adler. Very nice hippie establishment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of those over there in the Bay Area. So,
yeah, still.
No shortage.
Yeah.
I think, and you, as they say, you also do a lot of reading and work here, and you're involved with the Whitman
Right, yeah, House. I'm a writer in residence at the Whitman Birthplace since 2011. So.
And George has participated in a few of our Whitman specials, which we did one last week, as a matter of fact. So this has been a poetry and writing packed month for us here on the show, and you know, I couldn't let a Whitman season go by without George being here, so we got him in the week after.
Yeah, well, I still live, under the shadow of Whitman in Huntington, so, and being there for as many years as I have, it's his voice has crept into my voice in a lot of different, very interesting ways.
He's a strong force. You know what we were discussing during the Whitman show, George, was that. Apparently, they've resurfaced the mall, the Walt Whitman Mall. Did you know that?
Oh, what, they take the words off the...
Yes.
Yeah.
The one bone they throw, right? The commercial world throws. And now it's supposedly gone. I have to actually go check it out, see if the whole thing is off. But
That's too bad. I've got pictures of it, though. So
yeah, but that is too bad.
And besides which, you know, those words are in the books, so that's where they count.
That's true. That's true.
Who reads walls these days?
That's right. That's right. All right, so let's talk about it. Would you like to read something? You want to talk a little bit? What do you want to do?
I have two books coming out. You know,
yes,
I have one book that just came out 3 weeks ago from Night Ballet Press in Cleveland, and another one which is in the works, and that's the one that you've read.
Okay.
And that's Foothills Publications in Western New York. It's a terrific publication house. And they're doing a book, which you'll be out in time for my trip to California.
Excellent.
So, you know, both of these books come from... established relationships that have grown over the years, and they represent different types of work. You know, Night Ballet is a very hip press in Cleveland, and they do some of my edgier sort of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas the Foothills Publications is a little more nature oriented. Not entirely, but there's a lot of politics, and there's a lot of politics in it, and so they've included a lot of politics in the new book. So both of these things are coming out, and it's my 30th collection that'll be coming out, 30th collection of books. And I don't, you know, just to correct you, I've never self-published a book.
Oh, okay.
You know, so never self-published a book.
Oh, okay. You've always been published. That's great. That's
yeah. My chapbooks and full-length books have been published in three countries, Italy, England, and the United States, and a lot more to go. A lot of material out there.
Fantastic.
So staying ahead of the curve.
So you're involved, obviously, as we just said, in the Long Island poetry scene specifically as well.
Yeah.
And are appearing in many other places besides the Whitman Birthplace whenever a nice reading is happening somewhere, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, tomorrow night I'll be reading with some people from Arizona and New York City who... put out this book called Poetry of Resistance, and it was about SB 1070, which was a law that was passed in Arizona about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Very not conducive law. You know. So they asked me for a contribution. I wrote a poem for that book, and it was published. And so they're coming to New York City, and I'll be reading with them on Wednesday.
And where is that going to be, George?
That is the Medicine Show. At the Medicine Show.
Okay.
It's on East 9th Street.
Yeah, I know where it is.
Yeah, you know
been
where
there.
It is.
I've been there, and I don't think I've ever seen you there, but they
no,
do a
I've
lot
never
of
been there,
there
before. It'd be my first time there.
Okay.
I mean, we hang out more downtown around, especially the